Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
Right, and hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast presented by Macy Sports, episode 137. We're rolling through the episodes, we're rolling through the soccer, all sorts of things are happening here. Busy weekend of soccer has us back quickly. We figured out a bit of a schedule, but the Whitecaps have won a road game. I mean, like, we could put a klaxon in there. Not only that, the Vancouver Whitecaps have won a road game by more than a goal, which, oh my days, I don't remember when the last time that's happened. That has at least been like 2, 3, 4 years since that's happened. But we have a lot to talk about. The Vancouver Whitecaps. We got Canadian Championship semifinal coming up. We have some CPL chatter to talk about as we enjoyed some great CPL action. Otherwise, busy weekend. I mean, Canada men's 20s, if you're a fan, maybe not the greatest weekend for you there, although a fun game with the U.S. tonight for us as of recording. Maybe Canada can snatch a win. But before we dive into this whole smorgasbord of soccer talk, Sam, how are you doing this weekend? You got to enjoy a CPL game back in Canada. How's it feel?
It was phenomenal. And I mean, what an entertaining 12 hours of Canadian soccer I had, enjoying the Whitecaps match, what was later in the evening for me here in Atlantic Canada, and then rolling right into the next afternoon, heading down to downtown Halifax. Unfortunately, a really, really tough result for the Wanderers, thoroughly outclassed 3-0 by Forge FC, but we'll talk about it later on in the show. Tremendous environment, tremendous, I won't say stadium because it's kind of an informal setup, but just great vibes, and you know, just encouraged by to see the way the Canadian Premier League product continues to build, I think continues to get better, and the quality of some of the footballers as well. So we will dive into that, but I guess we're gonna kick things off with Vancouver Whitecaps. And as you said, Alex, a huge road win. Not one I saw coming, certainly. Caleb Wilkins and I on A6 Forever, we have this running joke where we're constantly picking the home team to win by a score of, you know, 2-1, 2-0, something like that. Finally, the model was debunked. I tried to pick against the model when RSL came to Vancouver, and I was burned for it, and I wasn't willing to go away from the model. I was went with a 2-1 Dallas win, but impressed by what the Whitecaps were able to put together. I mean, it wasn't an XG masterclass, obviously a tremendous free kick from Deber Caicedo, and then some opportunistic play from Lucas Cavallini to take advantage of an uncharacteristic FC Dallas defensive error. They've been pretty airtight so far this year, but not so good early on in the match. So the Whitecaps in many ways able to flip the script, score a goal early, take control, not something they've done much of, especially on the road. So super impressive. It makes the Whitecaps hard to understand though, still, when you see the 4-0 results, the loss to Seattle, then the 2-0 on the road against FC. It's just, I don't know what to make of it at this point. The Whitecaps seem, I think the more things change, the more things stay the same. This is an inconsistent yet generally kind of interesting team to watch that's right around the playoff bar, and that continues to be the case.
Yeah, the Vancouver Whitecaps, an enigma as we tried to so difficultly decipher the last time out. I mean, we spent all this time talking about what the Whitecaps continue to do wrong on the road. Funnily enough, I think a lot of the things maybe Vanni Sartini listened to that podcast, because it felt like they actually did a lot of the things we suggested them, and maybe in terms of both tactically as well as just little things such as mentality, etc. It leads to a special result. And Sam, I've actually just dived into the numbers, because I mentioned something off the top. When was the last time the Whitecaps won a road game by more than a goal? Do you have something off the top of your head, or do you want me to absolutely blow your mind here in terms of when was the last time the Whitecaps won by more than a goal on the road, and who was it against? And
they've the last time they won by a 2-goal or greater margin on the road.
Exactly.
So no 1-0, no 2-1 play.
Yes.
I'm assuming this never happened during the Mark DeSantos era. Is that correct?
Correct under technicality, because the Whitecaps did beat Chicago Fire 2-0 at MLS's back, which is listed as a road game. So on a technicality,
we're not counting that.
So you'll have to go back
that's
further.
That's exhibition. That's not league play.
Empty stands. Exactly. So I'd count that if you said that, but I was just noting for technicality, that was the only time it came close to happening.
I have no idea. I thought that it never happened, because I remember during Mark DeSantis's tenure, as it was sort of coming to an end, that the road record was appalling. So yeah, for the life of me, honestly, that's so far back now. I don't know, but I'm excited to find out.
Well, because I've been tracking the road struggles for a while. Like, this was pretty sure I'm the fifth actual proper road win for the Whitecaps since COVID, not counting MLS's back. So, and then another opponent's stadium, just their fifth road win in about 25 to 30 games. But funnily enough, off the top of my head earlier, I thought, I'm like, oh, like the Whitecaps, like, remember when they used to win away on the road all the time, like FC Dallas 4-0 with the Bernie Abini game, the Nico Mosquito bicycle kick. Funnily enough, that's the last time the Whitecaps won by more 2 goals. It was FC Dallas, July 29th, 2017. So almost 5 years, just short, 1 month short and 10 days of 5 years since the Whitecaps last won a road game by more than 1 goal. And it was a 4-0 drubbing. So when we say this is a very rare result for the Vancouver Whitecaps, and like, funny thing is, that only happened once this season. So you can say in the last 5.5 years, it's happened once. So we witnessed history really on Saturday. But funnily enough, for as unmemorable as the game as it was, yet very memorable, like, that's the kind of game it was. I mean, it just kind of straight from the beginning, Lucas Cavallini, the weird tap-in post shot. You're like, okay, maybe the Whitecaps are going to get some luck. But you've seen that song and dance before. They go up early. You get that false sense of hope, like your Tristan Blackman goal against his old club, or your Lucas Cavallini goal against Houston. But then Diver Caicedo scores. Again, if we're talking about something that also doesn't happen for the Whitecaps, maybe it was a day for it, a direct free kick goal. Other than Ali Adnan in 2020, it's been a while since that's happened. Just what a magical day, I suppose, for the Whitecaps. You're looking at the numbers. You're looking at what happened.
I think Cava had one direct free kick goal last year, did he not? I seem to recall a heavy strike.
I think in preseason.
I think in preseason
fooled you, because in the season he scored against Portland, got that run of injuries, and then it was that goal against Dallas. And then
I was racking my brain there for free kick goals the Whitecaps have scored, and I guess that one in the preseason, that was what came to mind. So, ooh, that's slim pickings. I mean, something we dive into, and I guess is a good transition into our top topic from this FC Dallas match, was seeing Andreas Cubas take that shot from well outside the area and threaten goal. I wasn't the only one who tweeted it out. I think there were a bunch of us who went, wow, to see a goal threat from outside the box in Vancouver. It's something that, you know, very, very few goals, I'm sure, if you dived into those numbers, have been scored from outside the box over the last couple seasons. But yeah, I guess we should start there, really, Alex, right? I mean, Cubas, that was the talk of the town. Ryan Gauld came into this team and obviously had a big impact at the end of last season, but more in the final third, attacking runs, key passes, that clinical nature, right? Whereas Cubas provides, I think, the box-to-box, just ground-munching, Matias Laba sort of, you know, destroy and progress, as you've coined that attribute in a midfielder. And I think it was everyone online, and I think this is a great point, was just, you know, the way that FC Dallas's midfielders and any attackers had to play around him. Like, he was an obstacle to overcome in the midfield. And usually we are used to seeing Vancouver Whitecaps midfielders getting turnstiled and, you know, having to chase defensively rather than being an obstacle to be avoided. So, you know, I have to give credit to Russell Tybert too, who I thought put in a decent shift in his comeback, and good to see that he's fully fit. But Kubas was a black hole in the best way possible, where he just sort of, you know, sucked the ball in and recycled it and sent the Whitecaps the other way, despite the fact they didn't have a ton of possession. So I'm curious for your thoughts, Alex, your first impressions, because certainly going by what was flying around in the ether, it was positive reviews, to say the least.
I tried to temper my expectations going into the game. I'm like, okay, it's first MLS start. He literally has trained with the team for like 6 days, made his debut just a few days prior, you know, coming off international break, a long season, all this, like the Whitecaps never do well on the road. I was like, okay, we're going to give him the training wheels. We're going to see what happens. And it was that play you mentioned. It was, so what you talked about, the shot. What happened was early in that possession, Dallas cut in the midfield. You can see it again on the clip. Kubas just made a ridiculous tackle. Like, he was like one of those, like, wrap your leg around and like get the back heel on the ball. Like, it was like, I want the ball and there's nothing in your power is going to stop me from getting it. And then it just kind of jump started to move. And it was like, it was the kind of move we don't see on the road. It was like Kubas gets the ball, plays it up to Godinho. And then it was just tick tock, cutting it, playing it until it ended up with Kubas getting it and almost scoring. And it was just everything about that play was like, okay, the Whitecaps have a legitimate presence in the midfield. And there's a few other tackles where he just went in so eager, but it's not like, you know, it's not just like tackle and then aimlessly, you know, do it. There was this idea, the way he just kind of shuffled, spied a chance to pounce on the ball and he'd get into action. And I think it was just unusual because with the Whitecaps, we're used to seeing maybe bodies sit in the midfield, but they're kind of empty bodies. They're just bodies that are there and maybe they'll stick out a leg and try. Their goal was to like, okay, maybe I'll get him to trip over himself or run into me or maybe run into my defender. With Kubas, it was like he had this look in his eyes that we haven't seen from any Whitecaps midfielders. I'm thinking maybe, you know, Laba's the obvious one. I'm thinking maybe Ali Ghazal back in his day, you know, some of the not many number sixes. You know, Janu Bakel does have it, to be fair. But the way Kubas, he just looks that it was just, I'm going to go get the ball. And he'd get it most of the time. And even if he didn't get it, he'd be annoying. He'd force the attack to turn around. He'd push you. He'd be on you. And it was just, it made such a big difference that's exactly what the Whitecaps have needed, because for whatever reason in this formation this year, no matter who they've tried, you look at the Columbus game as the best example of it. They've just been permissive. They've been soft. They just haven't been anything you've wanted out of a midfield. Kubas gave them all of that edge. And he's good. He's good, you know, in the attack, which is another bonus. He's not a liability. He's not, you know, even for Matias Laba, as much as you could love what he'd bring defensively, there was a reality that other than the, you know, a few spurts here and there where he'd rip a long shot or something, he wasn't like a wildly, you know, how do I say? Because he was competent in the attack, but he wasn't necessarily a game changer. The fact that Kubas brings these long passes, these progressive passes, these shots, all this sort of stuff on a consistent basis is a bonus, because what he brought defensively it just really changed the dynamic for the Whitecaps. And the fact that he was able to do that on the road is exciting, because we talked about it in the last show. The Whitecaps typically on the road don't do that. They just they kind of let the other team dictate play. It felt like for once the Whitecaps were actually dictating proceedings, and it was funny. And it was when Kubas came off, they stopped doing that. Good thing they had a 2-0 lead by that point and were able to see it over the line. But it was something else to see them finally dictate proceedings, is how I describe it.
Yeah, and as you said, it wasn't, you know, Kubas seems to have the ability to dictate proceedings even when his team isn't holding the majority of the ball, right? Like, he's able to be a tone setter off the ball in defensive structure, which I think is really, really, really important. And something that I noticed too, in a way, it was something that I didn't see, which actually made it very notable, was two ways the Whitecaps have given away a lot of goals over the last 4 or 5 years is, you know, kind of second phase play defensively. So across, some a pass gets played in, it's kicked away, and then, you know, a second opportunity comes in. Or transition, when the midfielders are tracking back, if the defensive line drops deep then those, you know, those attacking midfielders, the central midfielders for the other team are often able to scoop something up near the edge of the box and have a second chance opportunity. Didn't see really either of those chances for FC Dallas when Cubas was on the pitch. I mean, I think they were down at something like 0.2, 0.3 XG when Cubas came off. There were none of those high quality second chance opportunities. And I think, you know, even the way Cubas kind of was able to bring Tybert with him up and down the pitch, they seemed like they were in that right area. They seemed like they always had a good sense of where their lines were. And it was just notable how few kind of sloppy second chance opportunities the Whitecaps gave up, which is something you're very used to seeing, especially in a road performance, and was super emblematic of Seattle, where they were just dropping mega deep. And, you know, there was all the opportunity in the world for a ball to just drop in the box wide open to a Seattle attacker. So the difference was massive between those two matches. And I think Cubas obviously had a massive part to play in it.
For sure. And I think with Cubas, again, we'll say it's early. It's going to be a long season. He might not have performances like that all the time. Again, a risk with these guys coming from Europe, he might gas out, although the Ligue 2 season has been over for a while. But what I'd say for him and what I'm looking forward to him and what I felt like he brought is he was kind of the balance point that the team was missing. So we've talked about it a lot. The Caps have good defenders when they're healthy. They have guys who can do a job, you know, their first choice back three. Personally, a lot of it is undervalued when Godoy, Blackman, Veselinovic is healthy, etc. You look at the front, Cavallini, when he's in the form he's in, he's like continuing to low-key slip, like considering how a lot of the strikers around MLS have struggled as of late. Like, you could soon start to make an argument that he's been in the top five strikers in MLS this year based on his recent form. You add in Brian White, what he can do when he's finally up and running, you know, Gald, Caicedo, Nahome, when they're all at their best. It just felt like the Whitecaps, they lack some sort of balance point. You know, they had their top heavy stars, they had their bottom heavy stars, but it would kind of tilt towards one end of the field or the other. But for the first time, really, with Cubas on the field, it felt like they were getting the most out of both, you know, in an environment other than at home. Feels like even at home, sometimes it'd be like, oh, they'd be great offensively and they'd be permissive defensively. I think of the Portland Timbers game where it was just a track meet, or it'd be games like the SKC 1-0 win at home where it was just a snooze fest, and then it was one chance, you get your 1-0 and you take it and run. Whereas with Cubas on the field, it finally felt like they were getting the most out of both of their attackers and defenders, because that for me was the biggest thing. You look at, you know, Ranko, Javane, and Blackman, they all had good games. You look up front, Caicedo, Dahomey, we talked about him in the last podcast, but what the heck do we do? Well, they actually looked quite good in that 3-4-2-1 role, and they both did a lot of excellent things, and then Cavallini did his thing. And I think it's no coincidence that Cubas was in the heart of that, because I think if things continue, obviously I'm going to call him Destroy and Progress, got to back what I've created with that term. But also, if I'm going to go for a more specific term, he's kind of like a balance point, in the sense that if the Whitecaps were a log, their balance point would kind of vary up and down the log. Whereas you put him on the, you add him in, he makes sure their balance is right in the middle. It doesn't go, you know, too into the chaotic attacking, too into the boring defensive, they found a nice little neutral with him on. So Cubas, that's why I wrote, if there is some sort of Church of Cubas out there, I'm most definitely a believer right now.
Well, I want to pick up on one of those points you made, specifically defensively, because I thought that, right below Cubas in terms of the takeaways from FC Dallas was Tristan Blackman. Welcome back to the lineup, and tremendous bucket hat after the match as well. Going to shout that out. And then Javane Brown back from international duty. Because, yes, I think Cubas had a big impact, but I also thought that those two had exceptional individual performances that, I don't think you can attribute all the success to Cubas. I think those two played particularly well. And Javane Brown, actually, for the Whitecaps, has been in pretty good form since a tough start to the year. So I think, to me, I'm curious for your thoughts, Alex, but that pointed out that really, Ranko is the mainstay in the middle of this formation, but To me, it's got to be either Blackman and Godoy, or Blackman and Brown, or Brown and Godoy. Those, it seems like at the moment, have to be your wide center backs. And I think we saw it was jarring when Flo Jungwirth and Jake Nowinski came on the pitch, how much the team changed. And, you know, maybe that's a bit of a mentality shift with the Whitecaps going defensive late in the match and just kind of holding on. But I also think it speaks to the quality of Blackman and Brown.
I think Blackman, there's no doubt. I mean, we've been singing his praises since day one. Great signing. He's kind of lived up to that since coming in, playing on the right. Now we've seen he can actually play on the left too. So a bit of versatility there. I have no doubts with Blackman. Brown's been the one that surprised me, because I mean, I knew he played in a back three in college, but he just looks dynamic. He looks like he's, you know, he's fluid. He brings something a bit. He brings kind of what you want from Nowinski, but he's a little more of a quicker on the turn, maybe a little more dynamic than Nowinski, which again, Nowinski, as he's shown, he can have games against certain teams, but maybe against a team like Dallas, where you've got your Areolas, you've got your Ferreras, you got these guys who want to burn you in on turns and in space. I thought Jevane Brown, he did the job. And I mean, I guess part of the reason with Brown is you want him higher up the pitch, A, because he can bring something higher up the pitch. Also, if you think about it, the Whitecaps are a bit thin at the right wing back position, you know, especially with Bruno Gaspar gone after last year. That's where another guy who, again, has quietly been really solid as of late has been Marcus Cedinho. Like, he had a very good game against FC Dallas, which after some of the road games he'd had before, it was nice to see. And I think it helps that partnership of Jevane Brown and Cedinho, because Brown kind of covers a bit of what Cedinho might not do defensively, but it frees up, you know, Cedinho to push up the pitch. And then because Brown is kind of, you know, speedy and versatile, it kind of shifts him almost to a back four in a sense that, you know, whoever's on the left side, this time it was Raposo. We've seen Luis Martins. We've seen all sorts of guys there. They tend to be a little more defensively responsible. Maybe just don't look at Raposo's goal that he allowed a couple weeks ago against, I guess it would have been RSL. But other than that, he's had his flashes defensively. I think that Brown-Cedinho partnership was also an underrated part of this back three. And I think the fact they put Blackman on Raposo's side was maybe a smart move as well, to give them a little more solidity, in the sense that unlike Brown, who's a little more of a roamer, Blackman's okay, I'm going to hold it down. I'm going to, you know, I'm good on enough on the ball where I can make things happen, but he's kind of just filling in underneath the, you know, Raposo. I thought the whole back five, really, just the way it all came together as well. I mean, Kubas, we mentioned, has a role, but I think you're 100% right, Sam, that the back five stepped up. And I think it shows that Sartini's finally starting to twinkle and figure out some formations, some partnerships, like a Cedinho Brown, like a Blackman, you know, Raposo, little things like that. We've seen, you know, Martins come on, have an effect off the bench as well. He's starting to figure out who he has and how to best use them. And I think it's nice that we're seeing that come together as Kubas comes in, as Kayo comes in, as it's really going to, I think the Whitecaps feel like they're so close to really starting to tick and play the way that they finally been wanting to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Worthy shout out to Marcus Cedinho there, who I thought kind of continued what was, it's hard to have a good showing in a 4-0 loss, but I actually thought Cedinho was solid against Seattle and then was able to carry that through into Dallas. And as you said, they're developing some nice chemistry there down the right. I think for Jevane, I really, really like what he brings in attack, but I think almost in a way like Jake Nowinski, but maybe Jevane's just able to do it at a higher level. He's better defensively when he doesn't have to think quite as much about balancing attack and defending, right? Like if Jevane's just able to sit, be confident on the ball, make some passes, maybe make a run for it every once in a while, but he's not trying to get in and around the box so much. I think then he's able to just lock it down and be a little more focused on what his assignment is. So, I had suited him well. He's obviously shown that, he has that versatile nature. I mean, everything from wing back to center back, he seems to be able to play with a decent level of competency, but it's about, as you said, just, you know, fine tuning those roles and those relationships. And hopefully they can continue to do that at the back. We'll be curious to see with Eric Godoy rested, what they choose to do midweek. Obviously a bit of a different challenge where you're going to be, I think, almost inevitably holding a lot of the ball. So that's different than going on the road to FC Dallas and sort of playing the Counter-Strike game. In terms of, I guess we'll pick up one of the other notes, which was the Colombians.
Well, I'll hop in.
Okay,
I'll
yeah, go for it. Go
quickly
for it.
With the quick note on Javain, because you did get my brain ticking. It's a great point.
Well, we always talked about this with Jake, right? Is that Jake was great at like playing balls into the box or great defending. Like this was the whole start of the Jake at center back thing, but he wasn't really capable of juggling both responsibilities. And I get similar vibes from Brown. I don't know if you do too.
I think with Javain, I just don't know if he's maybe got the motor almost to play the back five, like the wing back role, not consistently. Because I think of the game against Columbus. I mean, it was obviously first game of the season. But I think of that moment where he just didn't track back and he looked gassed and they scored that goal. Whereas, you know, when he was playing right back for the Whitecaps under Mark DeSantos, he had his best performances there just because you kind of got to pick your moments. At a wing back, you're shuttling. Like here, you're going up, you're going down, you're going up, you're going down. Whereas fullback, you can go up sometimes, you can stay back sometimes.
Like two, right, three runs a half. And then that's kind of, you know.
You got to pick and choose. You're not like asked to go like, okay, all right, you're coming flying up the pitch all the way to the final third. You can even run up halfway to the pitch. And I think with Javain, it's no coincidence that in Jamaica, for example, he's become their number one right back, at least for recently playing in the right back of a back four where he's been asked to do a lot more defensively. And he's been starting big games. He's starting against Mexico. He's starting against Canada. He's starting against the U.S. He's playing all these huge games for Jamaica. You can say he's a de facto right back. And that's also something, it just made me think of that. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Also, why if Jamaica's given him so much trust in that back four role, maybe why Vanny's shifted him to this right center back role. I thought it was a great point from you, Sam, about Javain. I just wanted to note those things.
Okay, well, good we're on the same page there. I guess I'll just jump to the other thing that we talked about in the last show, which was the Colombians and the fact that, you know, Christian Dahomey, we were saying, can he get involved in a more advanced role? But then Deber Caicedo as well. I think just to finally see some of that chance creation come to fruition. Yes, it was from the, you know, from a dead ball spot on the free kick, maybe not the way that he's been creating a lot of his opportunities this year, but I think just to see the back of the net ripple. And those guys were good with limited opportunities in possession. And I think that once again, to praise Vanny Sartini, where maybe there would be some critiques after the Seattle match, he understood that front three wasn't going to get a lot of the ball. And I think that having those three up front together for this match was a good choice. They were able to make a lot of dangerous runs, even if the ball wasn't there, played into them and put Dallas, who's been a good defensive team, under pressure. So super, super happy for Deber. Nice to see Dahomey just get back into the squad in an advanced role. I mean, maybe slightly less notable from Daho, but still, I think, just a good building block performance. And what did you think of those two, Alex? Because we spent a lot of time talking about them on the last show and lead up to this match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was a bit of a improvement, I suppose. We saw some of the things we wanted to see from them. We wanted them deployed higher up the pitch. I just liked what they were able to bring in the sense that when they're both operating together, they it's like kind of what we said, like why they're so good in a front three. They're not just your typical, like just hug the touchline and make things happen that way. Like they're in and out. They love to drop. They love to work hard. They love to cut inside and let the wing backs overlap, but they also don't mind getting outside like Daho did on the goal to Cavallini, the great cutback after getting into such a dangerous position. I think it just kind of gave them a little more freedom, and it's unfortunate because it's like, now where do you fit Ryan Gold? Like, do you trust Kubas enough to hold down a midfield if it's just him and Gold? Where do you fit Kayo into that picture? It feels like, just given how important those two players will be, it feels like one of Daho or Deber might have to go out of the lineup. But it's good to know that, you know, if you keep up this 3-4-2-1 formation, now that you found your anchor for it in Kubas, you can kind of, it gives you a little more freedom to throw in Daho and Caicedo is one of the two and let them do their thing. Because I think, I mean, yes, Daho can play up front in the two. We mentioned Deber not really the thing. This kind of finds a hybrid of what their best roles are, which again, for Deber, it's out and out winger. Daho, it's somewhere even more of an inverted winger. This kind of two is a, it's a best of both worlds kind of situation. in a front three. And I think it allows them that they don't have to, what will be good, I think, is that they won't have to depend on the other. So I think when Gold comes in and replaces a Diver or a Dahomey, I think based on what we saw from this formation, there's enough hope that if you put Gold on the left, Diver on the right, it still should work out in some form. Or maybe you put Diver on the left and Gold on the right so we can cut in a little, or you do something like the same with Dahomey. But I do think this formation offered some potential. And we saw some of the things we've kind of been asking and wondering about of the Colombians, which it's only shown in the fact that they got two key goal contributions in such a key game.
To me, in this current shape, I think Daho and Ryan Gold underneath Lucas Cavallini feels like a dream setup. Just the versatility those two guys have, the way they'd be able to interplay, and the way Lucas Cavallini has really upped his hold up play, his passing, his chance creation this season. I think that's an enticing final form, certainly, for the way the attackers could play in this formation. But any final thoughts on FC Dallas before we move on to a bit of a York preview? I mean, we've already talked York a bit on the last podcast, and not a ton has changed since then. But yeah, final thoughts on FC Dallas, Alex.
I don't have much to say. I think it was just overall good performance, good numbers for once, at least other than the end. But we can call that as we like to in the advanced world, score effects. So it was just good to see a no-nonsense Whitecaps road performance for once. And hopefully they can maintain it. Like, it's perfect time for a road win like this. They got a bunch, three in a row at home in MLS play. You got your Canadian championship, so they have time to get even more momentum. Like, you're playing a Revs team next that are, you know, just lost Matt Turner. They just lost Adam Buxa. You know, they've been in good form despite that, but it feels like the wheels might be close to coming off the bus unless they, you know, especially what's going to happen without Turner in goal. Like, it's been, you know, he's been so good for so long for the Revolution. So you welcome that at home, and then you get LFC at home, which is going to be a spicy, spicy matchup, especially if the Whitecaps continue to pick up their form. And then I think it's Minnesota after, which is always a fun matchup at home. So I think three good chances to maybe pick up even more points. Whitecaps all of a sudden in a great position on the playoff line, just out on goal difference in games played, but a couple wins, and all of a sudden they're, with how tight things are, just 10 points between first and eighth where the Whitecaps sit. Lots of just with how everyone's been beating each other, some good chance for the Whitecaps to make some ground up, push into the top five, top four, maybe with a couple of wins if they're able to pull that off. So I think this Dallas road, because had they lost this Dallas game, or even, you know, tied, they kind of be pushed back down towards the bottom half again. It'd kind of be okay. Now they have to make up some ground at home. Now at home, they have some chance to not just make up ground, but like get ahead in the race. So I think it was a great timed road win for them. And hopefully they can lead it into some key results at home that all of a sudden would make them look very good as they near the halfway point here, just one game away, and certainly a lot better position than they were at the halfway point last year. We saw how that ended. So things are looking up for the Whitecaps.
Hey, Third Sub listeners, Sam here with a quick word from our friends at Macy's Sports. Been a while since we did an ad read, so thought we'd update you on a couple of things available in store. First and foremost of those, Derby Magazine, issue number 2, out now and available for purchase. If you like good storytelling about Canadian soccer, it's a great writing, great photography, great overall aesthetic. It's a good publication for you. And stories in there on Atiba Hutchinson, Daniil Henry, Julia Grosso as well. Obviously, gold medal winner, also Vancouver Whitecaps women's alumni. So that's awesome. But beyond Darby, you've also got some fresh offerings from Adidas on the boots front. Always apparel, supporters gear, that kind of stuff as well. If you're looking to dive into the summer season with some new kit, or maybe just reading up on a few Canadian soccer stories, Macy's has the stuff for you. So cheers to Macy's as always. Now we'll head back to the show.
Well, what did we talk about on the last show? We talked about Canadian Championship Final, maybe taking home some hardware, and getting and staying above that playoff line. so far, you know, with that FC Dallas win, they're taking care of, or at least, you know, managing the MLS league form. Now on Wednesday, Vancouver Whitecaps have the opportunity to at least partially check off the other box with a trip to the Canadian Championship Final. I say trip to, but they would be hosting the Canadian Championship Final, and catching York United at what seems like a really good time. We said on the last show they hadn't scored a league goal in over a month. That has remained the case, albeit, I mean, you know, against a good team in Pacific on the weekend. But, you know, really, York just kind of low possession. Alex, you said they had a couple great opportunities to score, but once again couldn't convert, which seems to be a theme. But York does, certainly in CPL play, they're consistently a good defensive team. Obviously, you know, some really notable names in CPL circles on that back line, two dynamic fullbacks, one of them departing soon, but nonetheless, two dynamic fullbacks for the Whitecaps match, a couple of good center backs, good keeper. They just haven't been able to find offensive consistency. Let's start here. If there's a platform, a way for York United to find a result against Vancouver, what's the way they do it? If they haven't been able to score against CPL teams, how are they going to find one against Vancouver? Is it a take it to penalty situation, or is there hope and light at the end of the tunnel that maybe they could squeak this one across the line?
Hey, two games so far for York in the Canadian Championship, two penalty wins. I think you're playing a red hot Whitecaps team. You have to say red hot Whitecaps, I think second best in the form chart, behind New York City, who's been red hot.
7 of 10, correct?
Something like that. I mean, the Whitecaps have been electric, pretty much the hottest MLS team. You could say hottest in the West if you want to go into specifics, second hottest in MLS. This is a tough battle for York. Like, you're a team that's struggling right now to score goals. You're missing so many key pieces. Like, you know, again, we mentioned how they lost, they lose someone like Lowell Wright to international duty. You lose, you know, you're without Petras. So Max Ferrari finally came back this weekend. Pretty bad weekend for Ferrari in Montreal at the F1, bad weekend for Ferrari at York United, who he showed a bit of the rust on his metaphorical vehicle. He missed a bad sitter, unfortunately. I do like Ferrari, but not one that he'll soon to want to forget for his purposes. So as for the York, they're not foolish. I think they know this is a tough game. This is about as unideal of a matchup as you could have gotten. Whitecaps away, the form they're in. A month ago, maybe you would have liked it. Now you hate it. So I think for them, they'll know that. So they're going to come out. I think they're going to go 4-2-2-2. Just be solid. Try to stem the tide in the midfield. Have a solid block. If it's a 0-0, if it's a 1-1, just get it to penalties and go from there. I think there's nothing wrong with that. It's cup soccer. It's not league. I mean, considering that they were able to tie Pacific 0-0, they've been able to tie all these good teams 0-0. 1-0, etc. They can on their day make a nuisance of themselves. So no reason why they just can't go out there, grind it out, and then go to penalties. So for York, that's probably what I'd expect. And then maybe, you know, there's something that the one thing is the Whitecaps seeing this might go a little gung-ho. Like, I do wonder out loud if we're going to see a Gold and Kubas midfield partnership, just so we can get that extra, you know, see that extra push from the Whitecaps. I do wonder if we're going to see Daho playing as a one wing back, just to allow, you know, a Diver Caicedo and a Brian White on the field in a front three. Like, I'm seriously wondering if the Whitecaps go, and we'll talk about lineup predictions in a bit, you know, as they go as gung-ho as possible to batten down hatches. What that could mean, there's some space in transition. York does have some dangerous options. So I'd say for them, they go deep in their 4-2-2, maybe try to make something happen in transition. If not, penalties is the way to go.
Yeah, I think that pretty well sums it up. It's definitely going to be an uphill battle. And I think it depends. Yeah, I'm curious to see how Vanni Sartini decides to set up. Is it going to be the patient, calculated, break them down at their first moment of weakness type approach, or is it going to be, Ryan Gauld, Brian White, Lucas Cavallini, all the attacking fullbacks just, you know, sending waves of pressure forward until finally York United submits. Really curious to see how the approach is going to go, you know, because I think if this was Mark Dos Santos managing, you'd probably get a more cautious, more calculated sort of measured approach. But I could see Vanni Sartini just saying, you know what, we're gonna play all the attackers and just overwhelm them with pressure. I don't know if that's gonna happen. Vanny's a difficult guy to pin down sometimes, and he seems to have different wrinkles for all of these matches. And something to watch out for too. I mean, we talked about previously with FC Dallas, but you had two purely strategic lineup decisions on the weekend, which was no Caio Alexandre, no Eric Godoy. So you'd have to imagine both of those guys would feature prominently in the York United match, or they're being saved for the next weekend in MLS play. Certainly Eric Godoy, Vanny's been very clear that he's only going to play one match a week. And that makes sense given his injury history. Caio, I don't know if that's something they're going to continue to do or if it's just while he's sort of on the road to recovery. But Alex, yeah, I mean, let's just kind of dive into it. If we're getting the crystal ball out, if we're trying to formulate a match plan or how we see Vanni Sartini setting this team up, what are your thoughts heading into midweek?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, first of all, who the Canadians are. Because you need three Canadians right now with the White Caps. So Cropper will be in goal unless you do feel confident enough to... I mean, you don't have much of a choice. Ben Alexander's down with the... Because you could bring him in for CanChamp because of his amateur status, but he's with the U-20s. So Max Anker is finally back and starting. But assuming, you know, all things, you know, it's not going to be Bomer. It's not going to be Anker. It's going to be Cropper. So it's going to be interesting to see where the other Canadians line up. I think Cavallini's a shoe-in.
Yeah, Cav is starting for sure.
And then from there, I'm kind of curious because does Godinho stick in? Does Raposo stick in? Does Tybert stick in? I think two of those three we'll slot in. Maybe Baldissimo for the Whitecaps, maybe for Canadians. But I'm looking, I think Godoy slots in. I think Blackman slots in. I think Ranko slots in. You kind of go gung-ho at the back three just for as much solidity as possible. And then maybe in attack, I'd say we see Raposo at wing back for a Canadian. I think we see Godinho on the right. So similar from those two, I think that wouldn't be much of a surprise to see that. And then in midfield, I'd expect to see Kubas, Caio. Then I'd say Gauld, you know, maybe White and Cava or something along the lines to get two of the number nines. I think that would make sense for the White Caps to get that extra striker on the field given the circumstances. But yeah, I'm just most curious about the Canadians because I mean, I guess Godinho came off, so he should be fresh. Raposo at 90, so maybe not. Maybe again, maybe Toussaint Ricketts gets a start. Maybe his speed and his directness could be a way to frustrate York defenders. But I'd expect something somewhat like that. Maybe Russell Tybert also sticks in because we do know he's always good for 90 minutes if you need him for whatever reason.
Yeah, I totally wouldn't be shocked if we saw, say, like a Caio Tybert midfield pivot and then Kubas comes on midway through. I thought most of your points were spot on what I was thinking. I think they go to out-and-out strikers so that they can just, you know, kind of volume attack into the box and see what they can create. So I would think that's Brian White, Lucas Cavallini. Heck, maybe there's a Toussaint Ricketts surprise start. But as you said, I would say Marcus Godinho is just going to roll again. I don't see any reason why he would get taken out of the lineup at this point, as long as his legs are feeling up to it. And then, yes, you've got Cava, Godinho, one of Tybert, and Raposo. That takes care of your Canadian content. And then defensively, I mean, yeah, you're probably just going to roll with Ranko, Godoy, Blackman. I think that, you know, Vanni Sartini has made it very clear that full strength is the way they're going to go with this Canadian championship lineups. There's no reason to shy away from it. So very much, you know, expecting a full guns blazing. And then it makes it almost more interesting what the what the strategy is on the weekend in MLS play, how many guys are fit and ready to go. But I will say for some context that when the Whitecaps started playing every 4 days, every 5 days, that's when their form turned around. Really, it was early in the year when the matches were more sporadic, that they didn't have as much success, even with struggling for squad depth, struggling to keep guys fit, playing every 3-4 days. This is where they've had success. So it seems like Vanny's good at managing these situations. It kind of suits his managerial style. So yeah, I would expect them to roll similar formation, but maybe a little, you know, asking Godinho and whoever is at the opposite wing back position to play a lot of crosses into the box, get it to White, Cava, Toussaint Ricketts, and, you know, maybe create some headed opportunities. And, you know, if I'm going to throw out a prediction right now, I'm going to say that the Whitecaps, I think, are able to get a 2-3-0 win here. So yeah, throw out that bulletin board material, see what York United can do with it.
Yeah, I think for me, it's, first of all, it just shows, boy, do the Whitecaps miss having a Canadian goalkeeper. How nice was it to have Max Crippo and then one healthy Thomas Asal just to throw in the
it's net almost like it feels like a non-optional thing for the Whitecaps at this point. Like they should have a Canadian keeper at all times. And it kind of points to, again, I mean, shout out to Cropper, who's been good so far, but you should almost really have, I think, an all Canadian goalkeeping group. Really, there's enough serviceable Canadian keepers. You should really never have to go outside the country to fill out that position.
Yeah, and I mean, just look between the Whitecaps do have a pretty good quartet long term of Hassall, Alexander, Anker, Bomer. That's pretty good for Canadian goalkeepers for the Whitecaps to rely on. Again, no, nothing against Cody Cropper. He's been good. I just find it funny when you notice a Canadian championship game, you got to meet your quota. The Whitecaps are lucky. I'm of the opinion that it should be 5 or 6. The quota is way too nice, the whole 3. So you can just kind of hide. You can hide 3 Canadians on the field, quote unquote. 5 or 6, you know, you're actually getting more out of those Canadians. And that's the one thing I've loved about the CPL teams is how they've leaned in. Like York typically goes 9, 10, 11 Canadians for this, which is, I think it's just awesome. And it's what the competition's about. And I hope they do the same on Wednesday. But for the Whitecaps, I just thought it was funny how the lack of Canadian goalkeeper feels weird and lack of Canadian center back. Like, boy, do they miss having a Derek Cornelius or even just like having an Amir Didich or something like that in the back three. Would have been nice just to turn to that. But I think for the most part, we have an idea of how the Whitecaps are going to play. We have an idea of who they're going to put in. It's just Vanni Sartini. What are those wrinkles? What are those surprises? But I think the Whitecaps are going to go for it. I think if I was to make a prediction, I'd say 2-0 Whitecaps. Stress them enough because it is a semifinal. Can't win things too easily, but get the job done. Hopefully the fans show up for good numbers. I mean, the Whitecaps, I've certainly been pushing this game since it's come out. I mean, it's been all over every Whitecaps game you've gone to. There's been buy tickets. And since the beginning, it's been $15 tickets. So I guess, first of all, if you're looking for a Wednesday night soccer game to go to in Vancouver, 7 p.m., you're going to see a cup semifinal, CPL against MLS. So either way, no matter what side of the coin you stand, either you can see an upset, either you can see the home team win. $15. I mean, not a bad deal, especially if you're feeling a little stiffed for cash after the whole Canada debacle, but you do want to go enjoy some soccer. If you do have season tickets, so apparently it's free in your season ticket. So maybe if you have tickets and you forgot you had them, or you know someone who does, I just, you know, I'm curious. I mentioned this just because I'm curious to see what kind of crowd it is. Because let's be real, the first round for the Whitecaps, the Valor game, the crowd was rough. So I do hope just because it is a competition I like and enjoy, that hopefully the crowd is good. So it's going to be curious to see how that is. So Whitecaps, again, adding to my point, 2-0 in front of a hopefully a good crowd. Should be an interesting game.
Yeah, I'll just echo those sentiments. I mean, we're not usually pumping the Vancouver Whitecaps' tires from like a, you know, products and promotion standpoint. But honestly, I mean, either if you're a season ticket holder, $15, very, very reasonable price for a cup tie, a semifinal. And it would be just tremendous. Yeah, I don't want to see for, you know, the national competitions semifinal, you don't want to see a sparse crowd. Like, I'd love to get some. I mean, heck, you're a Pacific fan. You're just a fan of the CPL in general. Maybe you don't go to a lot of Whitecaps matches. Maybe it's MLS plays a little expensive for you. Head on out to this. I would encourage you to do so, because you never know what you might see. You could see a York United upset. You could see thrilling penalties. Could be a really good evening out. So, like you, Alex, I hope it's a really good showing, and hopefully York United's able to put up a good challenge for the Whitecaps, maybe build some confidence in their CPL campaign as well. So, very much looking forward to that. And on the CPL theme, do we want to talk a little bit of Canadian Premier League, a little bit of Halifax Wanderers? I was at the Wanderers grounds yesterday. I don't know where to start, really. I mean, I guess I'll just start with the grounds itself, which this is my second Canadian Premier League venue I've been to. Alex says I've been to, allegedly two of the better CPL venues in Pacific and now Halifax. I'm splitting it in both coasts. But this, I think in particular, something that stood out to me was the location. Halifax is the downtown. Everything's already quite close together, but the fact that the Wanderers grounds is really smack dab in the middle kind of splits the downtown core and the main, one of the main residential areas. And the way people were just able to walk two or three blocks from the bar, from their homes, from where they parked, whatever, to the match was awesome, and just created a really good community feel. Even the couple days leading up to the match, I was noticing, whether it's, people with kit, it's on billboards, it's on the buses. It felt like there was a lead up to the match. And that's really, really cool to see a relatively large city embrace the Canadian Premier League the way Halifax has.
Wanderers are doing a lot of things right now. I mean, they really are. I mean, I've kind of been reading up upon it, following some people on Twitter. Like, that's a big thing. Someone noticed it. Someone mentioned in a thread, they're like, oh, I'm new to the city. There's Wanderers themes buses. There's storefronts just smack dab with Wanderers gear. There's Wanderers street signs. And there's a lot of cities. It's like, I don't know. Well, you're in some of the cities and it's just, you don't feel that presence there. And part of it's location. Part of that's, the size of city, et cetera. But I just love how the Wanderers, it helps that it is technically the top pro team in city, if not the set top two, because there's the NLL, if I'm not mistaken, the lacrosse team is there, the Halifax Thunderbirds. But other than that, it's either junior hockey, which, as we know, in small towns is popular, but still, that's a pretty big draw that you get. You're one of the top teams, top leagues in a city. And I've just loved how they've embraced it outside of the match day experience, because I think that's one thing. If you're looking to grow the sport in this country, an area where a lot of teams could stand to improve is really improving the community outreach beyond maybe just game day or the whole come to a game. And I think the Wanderers have kind of really, really united around their team. And then there's just the match day experience, the fact that they're consistently able to draw 6,000 to 7,000. It's a great location, like you mentioned. I'm sure you can touch into that a bit more, how it's just right in the downtown. You just drink at your pub or you meet up your friends and you just roll into the stadium without much effort, without, you don't need to bus or drive or even bike. You can bike a short distance. You can scooter. It's just super accessible. And then you get the 6,000 to 7,000 fans show up early. They're loud. The games are in the afternoon. So it's, not too late for the kids, but also it's early enough for the adults to get in the action. There's just a lot of little things done right by Halifax off the pitch, which is why consistently every week it's 6,000 to 7,000. It's loud and it's just, I want to go. I'm kind of earmarking maybe going to the fall to a game, if not early next year, just because I need to experience this sooner rather than later. And I'm very jealous and excited that you're able to get a taste, because I've done 5 now out of 8 in terms of venues. It's just Halifax, Ottawa, and Valor left for me. And Halifax is one of them that I'm just eagerly waiting to give a go, because all those factors that I mentioned.
Yeah, I don't know what the long-term plan is, but I really hope that they're able to build some more permanent structures at that venue, because it's, not that the current setup doesn't work, because it absolutely does. And the shipping containers are a great bit of local flair that actually create some really effective spaces. But certainly, Alex, for the media, if you're there in the fall, bring a jacket, bring a toque, bring gloves, because you're getting
I'll be ready.
You're getting blown around up there in the wind, even on a summer day. But it was great viewing angles over the pitch. So that was tremendous. And something you said and something that really stuck out to me was the way everyone was there 45 minutes, an hour before the match. Like I normally turn up as media for these things, hour and a half, hour before. I was expecting to, you know, be greeted. Alex, you and I have done this a bunch. We walk around the stadium. We just kind of explore. Usually if we're there early enough, there's no one else about. You just kind of have the place to yourself. It was not the case at all at the Wanderers grounds. People were there. People were hanging out well before the players were even on the pitch, kind of beginning their warmups. And I think part of that is what the Wanderers have done through promotions. I mean, they've got a happy hour before the match, you know, offering some drinks promotions, but also I think that they've just instilled that kind of culture in the supporters since the beginning. This is something you come, you show up, it's easy to get in, and you hang out with your fellow supporters before the match. And bit of a rowdy crowd too. Lots of chanting, lots of fan involvement. Had some Wanderers supporters going at some of the few Forge supporters that had made the trip. That was always good to see. It just it felt like a supporters group that really embraced the team and really cared about the team, not just kind of, you know, showing up on match day and checking in, but a full fledged kind of, you know, as part of the culture of the city, which is just, I mean, I think it's tough because Canadian Premier League has had such a little time really to instill that. Like, you've had these shortened seasons, you've had COVID seasons, you've had all these hurdles, all the hurdles that have stood in the way. And yet, to me, it felt like this was a team that had been around for 10, 15 years already. Like, it had that kind of culture and environment to it, which is just, as we've said, it's turning into a broken record now, but a massive credit to what the organization's been able to do. Yeah, I was super, super impressed. Less impressed, I will say, by what I saw on the pitch that day. It was a tough loss for HFX, but that aside, very, very good experience.
And I think it's cool kind of what you mentioned. So I think for looking at the sport in the country, we talk about little things being a soccer country, yada, yada. There's a lot of things like that that I'd want to see more of just nationally, be it at the national team level, be it the MLS teams, be it the CPL teams, just continue to develop aspects of those culture that are missing. I think of, for example, little things like you mentioned the show up early. It's true. Like even covering the men's national team on their run, at the start, it was like you'd go to Canada versus El Salvador. And it was just like, first of all, it was half empty because of COVID, et cetera. But still, like the El Salvador fans would show up 6 hours before and the Canadian fans would show up right at kickoff. By the end of it, when it was Canada, Jamaica, it was sold out BMO Field. Canada fans were showing up 3 hours before greeting the bus with smokes and flares. It's like, okay, why don't we do that more often? It's like little things like, hey, the women's national team plays in Toronto next week. You know, for us, you know, we've got to get a continuation of that, you know, welcome the women's team bus early at the club level. I mean, it's true. Like why the Whitecaps show up, it's, you know, in Europe when I think of say what got really popular is Everton in the Premier League last year on their run to staying up. And then how before games, it was like, you saw those scenes in the streets of Everton where the bus could barely get down the street. Like, that's awesome. And then little things like in the stadium, something that stuck out for me from Seattle when I went to the Champions League final, the whole stadium stood the entire game. That's something you see a lot of in Europe. In North America, it's really like a spectator thing. I noticed this for hockey. I noticed this for soccer.
I will say
and all this.
The one sport that I've attended in North America where they do that and they do a great job, and maybe part of this is actually leaked over within the city, is college football. I've been to some Washington Huskies games, and those fans will be up pretty much the entire game. And that's the one North American sports environment, because it's less corporate, less professional. It's more college students, people that really want to be there. And so you'll get that environment where people stand up the whole game. But that's a great point.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it just brings atmosphere. And I think things are going in a good way. There's a lot of good people at supporters group levels at all across the country doing their best to convince what, let's be real, is a very fickle sports continent. Let's not kid ourselves. Like, just in general, this isn't, you know, specific to soccer, but I just love to see little growing signs like that, what Halifax are doing. I like you can imagine from what I remember watching, they're pretty loud all game as a stadium as well. It's not, you know, they stay on their feet, they show up early. So they're doing a lot of things right. And it shows that a blueprint is there for teams to follow. So I just hope to see more of that, because I think it's great when, you know, I imagine a future in 10 years where these games are going to just mean, you know, they're just the crowds are going to be so fantastic. People have going to grown up with this league and et cetera. And it's on a right track. And I was just happy, yeah, that you got to experience that, because like you mentioned, I mean, it's phenomenal to think that a team four or five years ago, there was nothing to do with Halifax and soccer. And now there's a team every week that packs their stadium sold out with, you know, just getting this great fans support. It's great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to that Halifax match, it's easy to envision an environment 5-10 years from now, not even, I mean, 3-4 years from now, where each of these CPL venues is, you know, able to sell 10,000 tickets, match in, match out, and have that kind of tight-knit fan experience that some of these markets are being able to create. So very, you know, continuing to hopefully, I got some work to do to catch up to you, Alex, but over time, check out more of these CPL venues and take in some more matches. We'll say the only thing that was unfortunate is that, I mean, the quality of pitch looks great, even down pitch side, but definitely just the speed of the pitch, first touches sometimes, it feels like the Wanderers grounds does create a bit of like a slower, choppier match. And that didn't work out great for the home team in this one. Ultimately, Forge just had too many offensive weapons and maybe a bit of a lack of organization from the Wanderers. They dropped super deep on a couple early goals that just kind of set Forge down the right path. And ultimately, Halifax didn't have anything to respond with. But, you know, great to shout out to Marcello Polisi, former BC guy, former TSS Rover SFU player who was holding it down in the central midfield. Shout out to one of our Canadian Olympic qualifier favorites in Daniels, who's playing there. And yeah, lots of good Canadian players. Obviously, Halifax too. And really, it feels like a lot of CPL teams this year missing players due to injury. So that's a bit unfortunate to not see these teams at full strength. So yeah, tough match for the Wanderers, but ultimately for me, I think that's not really what it was about. It was about the environment they were able to create, and I think a platform for success long term. And yeah, Stephen Hart got in my face a little bit after the match. I asked whether the defensive struggles were down to tactics or down to the effort of the players, and he didn't like the insinuation, pardon me, that it might have been tactics. So that was always fun. Got to get involved, got to get stuck in. I mean, Alex, any thoughts for you on maybe, you know, Halifax's struggles in that match in this year a little bit, or thoughts on the pitch?
I mean, yeah, in terms of Halifax, it is a bit of a choppy pitch. It can work to their favor, but I think this year, the Wanderers haven't necessarily been at their best. It's funny, they've been really good at grabbing these results. I mean, they have 14 points just in the mix of everything, which is, you know, they've found a way to get some key wins, but they haven't necessarily always looked their best. You know, it's been disjointed at times. I think you can tell they're missing Joao Morelli, and even beyond Joao Morelli, there's a lot of talent, but maybe they're still figuring out, like, how do we get Corey Bent, Hakeem Garcia, Sam Salter, Aiden Daniels, Pierre Lamoth, Polisi, Jeremy Gagnon-Lapre, Andrea Rampersart, all these options. How do you get them all out in the field at once? Who's your best combination? What's your best formation? And I think for Halifax, kind of led to these mixed performances, because they'll find a good formula and then the next week it might not work. And it's been unfortunate. I think they've got a solid roster even without Morelli, and I think they'll be certainly in the playoff mix. But A, they got to kind of find that best formation, and B, got to get their home advantage back. It's a couple losses now, especially losing to Ford twice at home. The Wanderers ground, typically one of the tougher to visit in CPL, but it's been unusual to see. But I still see some hope in the and promise in the Wanderers. I think they're figuring it out, showing signs, but it's interesting times. I mean, Christian Ochsner said some pretty pointed comments as well after the game about, you know, some of his teammates are not stepping up. Between that and Hart's comments, maybe they're going to have their heart to heart, no pun intended, you know, coming together and let's figure this out before it goes off the rails moment that each team needs in a season, because if not, it could be crunch time for Halifax for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, definitely felt like, you know, the vibe was a somber one post-match where they felt like some change was needed, but at the same time, they're really still right in the mix. Like they're far from out of it in terms of the league table. They've been able to grind out enough results where very much still all to play for. So that kind of wraps up my Atlantic Canada soccer experience. I hope to be back again at some point for sure. It was definitely enjoyable, but any final thoughts here, Alex, before we sign off? We talked Whitecaps, we talked Canadian Championship, we talked a little bit of CPL. Anything you want to add before we wrap up the show?
Hang it on. It should be good. I mean, we got good slate of games this week. Two Canadian Championship ones. The first Canadian Classic of the year. No, we haven't seen one in MLS. First one is a CanChamp semifinal. Doesn't get better than that. We got a York United, Whitecaps. Can the Whitecaps finally get over 500 by North American terms and also just break even by European terms in terms of their record against CPL teams? This is their sixth game against CPL teams. They have now won. I guess they're not breaking even because the one win this year was actually off a draw from a penalty shootout. But at least get to a respectable record against CPL teams with the win against York. Or will it be a draw or another upset? We'll see. Otherwise, Whitecaps back in MLS action this weekend, as with everyone else. The women's national team hosting a very good South Korean team. Their send-off for their World Cup qualifiers, the U20 men's team, fighting for their lives down in Honduras. Lots of good soccer. So all I'd say is stay tuned for that, and we'll certainly be back again soon, I hope, with another show. Hopefully you enjoyed hearing us back and live in your podcast feeds. If you enjoy listening, if you do have time or a moment to drop a review on Apple or Spotify, it does mean a lot. So if you've been enjoying the podcast, feel free to take a minute to do that. But either way, we see your support. We really appreciate it. And as usual, we want to thank you for getting stuck into the third sub each week. But always is a pleasure to chat. And I guess kind of on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Kungaruzic, at BTS Fan City, btsfancity.com. And hope to chat again soon with a lot more soccer news. And for the Whitecaps perspective, maybe more positive news as they continue their surprise run.
Certainly the Whitecaps continue to surprise as the season goes on. You can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at 86forever.com for all of our written content. You can find the podcast at Third Sub Pod on Twitter, The Third Sub on Instagram. As Alex said, like, subscribe, engage with us on socials, and thanks for listening. We'll chat again soon.